Hi, my name is Alejandra Salimi, and you're listening to the Healing Theology Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to our first official episode of the Healing Theology Podcast. I am so excited to start with a dear friend of mine who I met through the Duke universe. I'm excited to have my friend Mary Lowe here for our first podcast. She is a nurse who works in Washington, D.C. Mary spends the majority of her time or the majority of her nursing career in Christ House, which is an inpatient medical respite serving men experiencing homelessness in Washington, D.C. She received her undergraduate degree in nursing and psychology from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and her master's of nursing from Duke University. She completed a certificate in public theology through the Neubing House of Studies, an affiliate of the Graduate Theological Union, and a certificate in theology and healthcare from Duke Divinity School. Her areas of interest include addiction medicine and primary care for people experiencing homelessness, and she believes her theology remains most informed by her patients. In her spare time, she enjoys running long distances at an average pace and falling out of yoga poses. So welcome to the podcast, Mary.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to see you again.
Yeah, it's amazing to see you again. How are you doing? How are things in DC these days?
Things in DC are good. We have a sunny day out today, so I'm coming to you from my apartment, and I happen to be off today because I'm doing some training that I need to do in order to renew my nursing license. So I was grateful to be able to meet with you today and hanging in there.
Yeah, thanks for carving out a little bit of time on your day off. I just want to jump right in, and I would love to hear, obviously you gave us a little bit of your background with the bio, but I would love to hear more about how you identify in the world professionally and as a human living in this kind of chaotic world. So can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. So as you said, I'm a nurse and nurse practitioner by training, and I've been a nurse since 2010, working primarily at Christ House, which is a homeless medical respite in Washington, D.C. We serve men who are experiencing homelessness and provide them short-term medical care after they have had some sort of acute medical need arise. So sometimes they come from hospitals or shelters. They'll be referred in from primary care, or families and friends will refer them in and they come to stay with us. And so I started my career as a nurse at a hospital first and then ended up transitioning to Christ House as a nurse. And then during my time there, I was working with the woman who founded Christ House, Dr. Janelle Getchess, and she was saying that there was really a dearth of folks who were willing to work with folks in under-resourced populations and provide primary care. And she said that, and I was like, oh, okay, I feel like I could do that. And at that point in my career, I was, you know, in my late 20s and like looking to go on to further my academic career anyway. And so I thought maybe I would actually pivot to becoming a nursing professor, but I was like, okay, I can get a nurse practitioner degree in the meantime to work my way towards getting a PhD in nursing. And I got my NP degree. And then I was like, well, I guess if I got this degree, I should practice for a while. And then I ended up falling in love with the work of seeing patients in the exam room and beyond. And so ended up completing school and working for a couple of years in a federally qualified health center, serving all ages, womb to the tomb, as I like to say, and men, women, babies. Then the nurse practitioner who was working at Christ House left. So I ended up coming back here to work. And that's how I got to where I am now.
Wow, that's incredible. What a beautiful representation of the many winding paths that academic journeys take and professional journeys take.
Absolutely. Like I said, I never would have guessed that I would have ended up continuing to clinically practice. And I think part of that comes from having gone to school at a bigger nursing academic institution where there really is this almost pressure or belief that you should keep going till like you hit a terminal degree. And it's been really gratifying for me to stop and pause where I am. And I'm not sure if I'll end up going back and leave that open, but it's been good to be here.
Yeah. I think if I can say anything about the academic journey is that it's never too late to go back to grad school, never too late to start an academic journey. So a master's or a PhD or whatever it is that people want to do, it's usually always on the table if the timing is right. I would actually love to hear more about Christ House and how your time there has shifted your experience while working as a nurse practitioner.
Sure. And I'm just going to dive right into it because it is very interlaced with my church story, my personal relationship to church, and then also by proxy God, which I always like to remember that church does not equal God. They're two different things. So I grew up Lutheran, and then I like to say accidentally became evangelical because that's what happened. I, you know, switched churches and started going to an evangelical church. And there was really a big push within that church to participate in missions of sort. And so I did a couple short-term mission trips that were medically based that I really liked and graduated from nursing school and then ultimately ended up applying to work for AmeriCorps, which is how I got placed at Christ House as a nurse. And I would be lying to say I didn't come because I thought I was going to save the world. Like, you know, I think that just is a message that is oftentimes in with mission work, particularly in the white evangelical Western church. And I was definitely coming with that mindset. Like, I am called to take care of the poor. I might win a soul or two over for Christ too. Wouldn't that be great? And I'm going to come and live this like humble, but like very self-centered life, you know, doing this. It did not take me long. I would say maybe a couple weeks to get to Christ House for me to recognize that one, that actually did feel pretty inauthentic to why I wanted to help folks. And two, that that's not what my patients were looking for. They were looking for somebody to be a good nurse. They were looking for my skill set to be, to help them get better. And then on a more human level, they were looking for someone to be with them. And Henry Nouwen has this definition of compassion, and I'm probably going to butcher it a little bit, but I'm going to try. But I believe it's to have the courage to go to somebody who is suffering and be with them. And that is his definition of compassion. And I really feel like that is where my mindset ended up shifting after I realized that my patients weren't looking to be saved. Plus, I can't save them. That's a great myth of, you know, white saviorism mindset as well. It's not my job to save anybody. And I feel really glad about that because it takes a lot of pressure off so that I can actually just be present to folks. And so that's how my time started. It shifted because I ended up being placed at such a wonderful place that has amazing folks of all sorts of different ecumenical backgrounds, from nuns to like Methodists to folks who, you know, don't believe in God or a higher power, all coming together and not being forced to change their religious outlook in order to provide the kind of care that we want to provide, which is holistic and patient-centered. And so that was really beautiful to see that emulated. When I was like knee deep in the evangelical church, I really felt like I had to fit a certain mold. And then when I realized that Christ House was not asking me, like my employer was not asking me, my patients weren't asking me to look anything different than as I am, that was really liberating and part of my own healing too in my religious journey.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that with us. It's so interesting to hear your story. I've heard you chat on the topic once before. And so it's interesting to hear the kind of thought process and the way that your faith has changed as your vocation changes as well. And as you grow in your professional setting, there's a question I want to ask you, because one of the things that I want to highlight in the Healing Theology podcast, and I think in the Healing Theology platform overall, is the intersectionality of religion and health, whether it's healthcare in a like traditional health systems or, you know, semi-traditional health systems like Christ House, or in the public health setting, kind of like what I work in personally. And, you know, there's loads of people who are religious or spiritual who work in healthcare, right? You are not the only Christian nurse who is really driven by their faith. But many don't take the time to really unpack their faith. And I don't think many of them take the time to pursue theological education and certificates on the topic and things like that. So I would love to know what drew you to divinity school and to really unpack these things. Like, what was, do you, was there a moment or were there experiences that really drew you to engaging in this faith-driven work and unpacking it from the kind of evangelical whiteness that you've mentioned a couple times?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the short answer is yes. The slightly longer answer is that, and again, this is why my story of my work as a nurse and nurse practitioner can't be separated from my faith and my relationship to church, is that I ended up having a situation arise where I was realizing the patriarchy in the term of like just the general imbalance of power, not necessarily specifically just between genders, but in general. So I was opening my eyes to the patriarchy that was very present in the church that I was attending, the evangelical church I was attending, and starting to ask questions and expand my idea about who God was and who God loved and like what's sin and what's not sin. And this specifically came out in a reckoning with the idea that I believe that everybody, no matter how they identify and who they love, deserves a full affirmation and is fully affirmed by God. Like, I just, no questions, no ifs, ands, or buts. And I was going to a church that was kind of secretly, honestly, secretly not believing that, but not being transparent about it and not willing to have a conversation. And so I ended up having this crisis of self and faith around the time I started working as a nurse practitioner. So I'd already been at Christ House for a little while and leaving that church. And I will tell you, leaving that church was the hardest thing I've ever done, because I, at that point, wasn't able to verbalize that there's a difference between God and church. And I was certain that God didn't love me anymore. Just so certain. And feeling like the world's crappiest Christian, you know, like I have failed because like these people who are in power, these pastors, mostly white men, who have told me this identity of who I should be, I have failed that outlook. And here I am standing in a wilderness, looking around and not knowing what to do. And so I'm grateful that I had some companions on the journey, some of my fellow churchmates who felt similarly and left, but it was extraordinarily lonely. And so my initial foray back into academia was through my first certificate I did in public theology through New Begin, which was truly my search to see if there was still a way that God could love me. And that's how I came to that. And that particular program is San Francisco based, and they're fantastic. They've rebranded. They're now called the Faith and Justice Center, Center for Faith and Justice. And the folks there really taught me a lot about the language of or how to speak aloud what I was feeling. And also we dove into a lot of the sins of the church, the idea of corporate sin versus individual sin. And I really experienced a lot of healing from that. And it allowed me to get my feet back on the ground and realize that one of the lies that the church tells us, and society, capitalism, empire, put in the word, is that we are inherently broken. And particularly the evangelical church loves to drill that in. But the reality is that we are not inherently broken. We're inherently beautiful and loved and whole. And so I have reoriented myself to Christianity with that as my framework. And it's been liberating, because then I remembered that God never stopped loving me. He always loved me. Then I started to wonder, if I have felt this way as a human being in this world and who happens to be a nurse, and it has played so deeply into my mental health and mental health struggles that I've worked through over the last several years, other people have had to feel this way too. And so I started to seek out particular programs that spoke of the overlay of theology and healthcare, which is how I found Duke, the certificate in theology and healthcare that I did there. And so that's how I ended up back there again. And at that point, I actually was entering wondering if I was going to be pursuing further education in theology as well, like maybe a master's into a PhD or something like that. And currently I'm paused in that, but that's how I ended up there.
It's so wild to hear your stories, because I've been researching the intersection of religion and public health for the past couple of years. And I feel like you're highlighting a couple of the cruxes of my education or my scholarship, which is that religion is one of those things that can be both positive or negative. It can be a positive factor or a negative factor in the health field. Maybe it could be called a risk factor or a protective factor for health outcomes. And, you know, we talk about it from like a individual setting, right? Like the impact that you must have had to your mental health, thinking that your faith, you know, your faith community might not want you anymore, or that God might not want you anymore. I can't imagine what that must have done to your mental health, your physical health. And then also, you know, what does it mean for churches that maybe have a lot of power and have a lot of attendees who are actively or secretly trying to exclude people or not put services for things? It's such a kind of anecdotal, but I think a really good example of the ways that religion is both a positive and a negative. And so I would love to hear, how have you seen this played out, the kind of positive, negative, both factor of religion in health or in healthcare during your time as a nurse practitioner in Christ House?
Thanks for asking. And I'm going to proceed a little gently, because I'm always careful, even though I am speaking on behalf of my patients, not be their ultimate speaker. But I would say that one of the ways that I'm most grieved at the way religion has played into my patients' life is that the number of folks who think that their illness or their injury is because they sinned. And I consider it one of my greatest privileges to sit with folks and call that lie out for what it is. And so that would be a time where I feel like I see religion in their lives maybe being a bit of a detriment, or let me put it like this, the theology that they were taught, I just don't think is one that's like healing or of flourishing. And where I've seen religion really help is that Christ House does not force religion on anybody. People can participate if they want, but I have had the great joy of being at our Sunday optional Sunday service and having somebody walk in and hear liturgy and songs from their childhood and have it light up a part of them that probably has not been lit in a while on a soul level. And so I've seen it provide comfort, particularly through liturgy and song. I have seen prayer help anchor folks. We have and I know there's some debate on the pros and cons of like a 12-step recovery model, but we do offer optional 12-step meetings, which do have a belief in a higher power. And I've seen folks anchor their recovery in that and flourish. And so, yeah, to your point, there's like pros and cons. And I think it really matters. It just reminds me that the words we say matter around theology, and also that the idea that our theology should never be a prison. Anytime that I feel like my belief about God or theology is starting to limit somebody or exclude somebody or make that feeling arise in my chest, that tightness, that to me is my little warning flags are going off. Am I like creating like a prison theology here when I need one of liberation? And so, yeah, I guess that would be how I see it.
Oh my gosh, I have chills just listening to your answer. And I can't imagine the impact that you're having as a provider to people who come into Christ House. And you know, I recognize the kind of savory language that can come with. You know, you're so humble, but I'm just so inspired that there's people like you who are able to step into these helping professions, into quite literally healing professions, in a way that recognizes just power dynamics and limitations and being kind of driven by faith without having it to be this kind of evangelical like bonk over the head. Because I do think that we'll talk about this later on in the podcast too, but there's so many examples of how religion has gotten it wrong and like faith communities have gotten it wrong in the helping professions. And it's so beautiful to hear an example of somebody and of a community, right, of Christ House, who's mm-hmm. trying to do it in a way that I think is bringing reparations and bringing healing and mm-hmm. actually building something that is worth pursuing and like sustaining into the generations to come. And, you know, we've been chatting back and forth and emailing back and forth in preparation for this podcast. And we've had a couple of conversations before, just you and I over coffee, around just interesting conversations that maybe have been brought to you as you present your work by others who also are in this kind of religion and health space, people who are in the general religion and health field who believe that your job as a health provider is incomplete if you do not pray with your patients. And so I would love to kind of hear more about the interaction that brought about this comment and how you navigate a comment like that. And what do you think of when you hear a comment like that?
Again, in full disclosure, the first time that was brought to me, it broke me a little bit, because I was essentially told that I wasn't a good provider if I wasn't offering to pray with my patients. And I was thinking about it. I don't think I've ever offered to pray for a patient. And that's very specific why I haven't, which I'll talk about in a second. And it does have to do with power dynamics. But the first thing I want to say is that I do not fully understand the church's perseveration with saving souls. I get it, because we are, you know, called to like emulate God, but I just don't understand how that somehow got translated into evangelism directly, like through word only versus like, I don't know, meeting the basic needs of people. So that's my first, you know, side comment on that. But as I said, I've never personally offered to pray for a patient. And the reason is because I, as a provider, even though I am a woman and also not a doctor, so like in the power structures, like being female and not a doctor, it maybe sits a little less than being male and being a doctor, I still am a provider. That's the term that's used to describe nurse practitioners, medical doctors, DOs, and PAs, physician assistants. And that is a power place in the structure, particularly with patients and the way our healthcare structures, set up. And so I personally have seen abuse of power when it comes to spiritual disciplines. And for that reason, I do not offer to pray for my patients. Now, that said, there are times where patients will ask me to pray for them. I've definitely never, though, had a patient ask me to pray for them right then and there on the spot. Never in all of my years. Like, even though they, you know, especially at a place like Christ House, it's presumed that most people are Christian or identify somewhere on the spectrum of Christian. But if a patient asks me to pray for them, of course I'm going to go home and like in my personal prayer practice, like hold them in my heart and pray for them. I also think too that sometimes I've been trying to embrace a broader sense of what prayer is. And so, for example, one of the things that I do that my patients wouldn't necessarily know is for me, like a physical act of prayer is I'll be doing their wound. And I'm like making right now with my hands, like I'm doing a wound. And when you finish winding the bandage on, you tape it, you like kind of want to make sure it's secure. So you lay hands on it just to be like, okay, like this is going to stay in place. And I really come to see that making sure this bandage is secure moment as a form of prayer. I'm not like praying necessarily for like, well, I am hoping and cheering for this, like that the wound is going to like heal completely or anything, but I'm just like, it's like a physical laying on hands. And I think it particularly in a patient population who has been dehumanized by sleeping on the streets, by not having access to clothes, to showers, to being open to certain infections and bugs that people might be turned away from, and having those things said to them on a day-to-day basis, to actually physically get proximate and lay hands on somebody in and of itself, I hope is they can see that as a form of prayer. Because I have this belief that God is actually the interconnectedness between us all. And when I can remember that that's what God is, like God is connects us all, then anything I do to connect with somebody else in a way that they, that makes them feel affirmed in their human dignity is prayer.
Oh my gosh. That's so beautiful. And I imagine you like laying hands on your patients, right? That, you know, for people who maybe aren't as familiar with like the religious community or didn't grow up in church, laying hands on someone is very much a big spiritual practice in certain denominations, definitely some cultural communities as well. And so It's a beautiful, almost like rebranding or turning it on its head and saying, you know, there's ways to, whether we want to call it evangelize or promote the theologies of healing and liberation without it having to be, again, this kind of forceful, I don't know, almost like the coloniality of it. It's not present. And yet the healing, I want to believe, is hopefully being felt by your patients. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
I want to tap into some of the complicated history that goes into this conversation, though, because obviously you work and it seems like most of your experience has been domestically in the U.S., mm-hmm. But there really is such a complicated history of faith-based medical spaces, whether it's churches who go do medical mission trips or faith organizations that start hospitals or some sort of like healthcare entity in the States or abroad. And it can highlight both the power and the reach of faith communities to help be facilitators of healing, but it also at times historically has been a big way that faith communities have colonized and have kind of created harmful practices in those communities that they're trying to help in. And so I was wondering, what are some of the things that you have learned about working with these kind of religious health spaces that has helped you understand how the theologies of liberation can fit into that type of work?
That is such an excellent question. And I feel like a novice answering it, but I'm going to give it my best shot here and speaking through the lens of a middle-aged white lady. The question that I have to ask myself, if I'm wondering if the work I'm doing, again, is erring on saviorism or our disruption or colonization, is, am I centering myself in this narrative or am I decentering myself in this narrative? That's the first question. And then the second question is, if I have successfully decentered myself from whatever narrative, and I'll give an example here in a second. My second question is, then with what power that I have because of this world that we live in, am I using that then to center the folks who actually deserve to be centered? And as a Christian, we are taught that the folks who deserve to be centered are those who are marginalized. And so the best example I can give, and I think this one is pervasive in healthcare, and it's nobody's fault because it's a broken system. Well, it's everybody's fault, I guess, because it's a broken system, is this idea of martyrdom. There is such a martyrdom in healthcare, like who's staying the longest, who's going to see this the most patients, who's going to go the extra mile. And that is a centering of oneself in a narrative. And so I have had to ask myself a lot of times, particularly working with an under-resourced population, Mary, are you putting on your martyr hat right now? Or are you actually like honoring the inherent dignity of the person sitting in front of you, as well as honoring your own inherent dignity and knowing your limitations and being able to provide services or to share what you've learned in school with folks, which I truly think that's what medicine is like having a skill set and sharing it with somebody. And so those are the things that I think about when I hear this question. And I just feel like it just scratches the surface of what you're asking. But
yeah, no, thank you. Those are great starting points. I think there's a general humility that I think we have to bring in whatever profession that we're in when we have that power, whether it's a power of where we come from geographically, our gender, our race, our education, right? Like the two of us are talking from a position of insane educational privilege that when we interact with communities that maybe don't have access, it's something that we have in mind. And so I think that humility is so important, both to recognize for ourselves, but also in community, right? Like I'm sure you probably have people close to you, whether it's your partner or your friends who like can also ask you that same question of like, Mary, are you putting on your martyr hat?
And yeah.
It's the humbling, tough love of close community that can call you in those moments as well.
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing that I just thought of to hearing you speak is even like the little things like the word choices and the education thing is what popped this in my head. I had a patient the other week who was a victim of a stabbing, which is awful. It was a random stabbing and he had to have multiple surgeries, experiencing homelessness, was staying in a shelter and then came to us after all of his surgeries and still then has a huge incision on his abdomen from where they did the surgeries that required wound care. And me and the other staff would help take care of his wound and, you know, dress it every day. And I saw him, you know, recently and his wound is nearly healed. And he's like, oh, my wound's almost healed. Does that mean I can leave soon? Because he wanted to leave to go stay with a friend, I believe. And I said, yeah, as soon as your incision's all the way healed, that should be like the perfect time for you to go. And he goes, incision? You mean my cut? And I was like, yes, your cut. And so in my head, if I personally would have used the word cut, I would have been like, oh man, that might be triggering to the fact that he was actually stabbed. Like, I want to be careful not to use that word. But instead, I put in a word that, of course, not everybody's going to know what an incision is, especially if you've been like medically traumatized because you had this terrible act happen to you. And then I think just being in the healthcare system is traumatizing. And so I just was so beautifully and appropriately taken aback when he said that. And just like, yeah, you're cut. Like, that's the word that works for you. And I, at this moment, I was like, Mary, remember, the words matter. What you say matters.
Yeah. Obviously, you're working in a helping profession. So whether you were working in the fanciest, richest hospital in the world or working in a space like Christ House, there is so much that is expected from our healthcare providers and people in helping professions to really pour out and take care of the people that they're working with. And so I was wondering if you had any realistic self-care practices for longevity and serving specifically in under-resourced populations, if you are okay with sharing them.
Yeah, thanks for asking. Some of these I have just recently adopted and they've been life-changing. One good way to not be a martyr or center oneself in the story is to like not work all the time. So I recently dropped to 4 days a week at work, which has been fantastic. And on that other day, I do whatever the heck I want. I go for a run. I hang out with friends. And it feels kind of naughty to say that because, you know, I am again, middle-aged, don't have a child yet. And so, you know, there's that whole like layer of maybe I should wait until I have a kid, you know, to take this. I'm like, no, I'm just taking it. So if possible, trying to figure out ways to work the amount of hours that feel okay. So that would be one. I'm a huge proponent of psychotherapy. I have been doing it for years, nearly prophylactically at this point, but it just becomes a good third space for me to be able to process things that I don't necessarily want to put the burden of processing that on my friends and family. So that helps a lot. I really do enjoy and have like in my early middle age come to find my body. Because again, a lot of what I learned when I was younger is that the mind or the intellect and the soul are important, but the physical body aren't. And so I have just taken this, you know, 30 something decade of my life to really connect with my physical body through movement, whether it's yoga or running or, I don't know, popping on my Peloton, whatever, to physically move and realize that that is a good thing and not something that is less than studying for a test for school or doing continuing medical education. And so those have all really helped me. I think too, I, as I mentioned, have really great colleagues. We do process in real time a lot together. And I've had the privilege of being mentored by them as well on how to like, I don't know, just approach difficult situations at work. And so I think those things help a lot. And then the last thing I'll say too is, again, I want to be careful because I know this can be pricey, but I try to like always have a trip on the books, even if it's far out or local or something inexpensive, just to, again, removing myself from my commonplace to a third space. It just provides a lot of perspective. So I think those things help a lot.
Yeah, thank you for bringing up all those things. I think the early stages of healing theology, when it started when I was an undergrad, the analogy that I would often use to understand this before I had more like academic language around it, if we want to call it that, was the trifecta of the mind, body, spirit, you know, like our mental health, our physical health, and our spiritual health, whether it's spiritual or just the energetic universal connection that we have with others, it's all interconnected. It's kind of like a three-legged stool that if you take out one leg, you're falling over. Like it really is dependent on the three being in somewhat harmony together. And so I appreciate you raising the trifecta, right? The taking care of your mental health, taking care of your physical health, and your spiritual well-being as well. I have the Furious Five questions that I like to ask all of my guests. So sure. I'm going to give you a question and you can answer in as little or as many words as you want. So the first question I have is, can you give us a quick summary of how you understand the intersection of health or public health and religion?
Oh, so I'll be honest, the first thing that popped in my head is I feel really a little disenchanted. And it's actually more so just my church baggage that makes me say that. But I feel, and I'm not just saying this to like stroke your ego, I feel really inspired by like the work that you're doing, even with this podcast and creating places for us to have hard conversations or conversations that don't have full answers. And I had heard, and sorry, this is not that serious, but I'll be trying to be quick about it. I had heard Elizabeth Gilbert, the author, speak recently, and she talked about the idea of when we ask questions, especially to the divine or to God, we so often want to ask why questions, but why in and of itself is not necessarily a spiritual question. It's not going to give a spiritual answer. It's a question that we ask in our youth, like, why is the sun like this? Or why did this, like, as we get older, why did this terrible thing happen to me? The answer is we don't freaking know. But good questions, good spiritual questions to ask are how and who? How am I supposed to be in this world and who am I supposed to show up to? This podcast creates space to ask how and who questions. And so thank you. And I see a lot of hope in the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. That means the world. Thank you. And yeah. Elizabeth Gilbert is such a beautiful just writer in the realm of like almost like secular spirituality. I don't know if she called herself that, but I'll put it in the show notes. Big Magic, I think, is one of the books that I devoured by her. I think I read it in one sitting and it's just magically beautiful. So if you were talking to someone about wanting to also work in a similar way of the intersection health, specifically via nursing, what advice would you give them?
Very practically speaking, as much as they had control over it, the advice I would give would be to spend as little money on your education as possible. And so that might look like going to a local school or a state school versus like a larger, more private school, and then seeking out creative ways for loan repayment. For example, I participated in the National Health Service Loan Repayment Program, which actually pays, if you serve a number of years, then it will actually pay back your grad loans for your nurse practitioner or doctor degree. So that has been fantastic. So that would probably be my serious answer to that, is find creative ways to pay for school so you don't have to get stuck working a job that doesn't fill you at some capacity.
Absolutely. What are some ways that you are finding joy these days?
Oh, so many ways. I really enjoy coffee. And so I like actually making my morning coffee in the morning is very sacred to me, looking for like little bubbles as they rise, as it's being made. So really focusing on that 2 minutes is almost like a centering exercise. So that would be one. I also am training for my first ultra marathon, which means I'm running so much and I am like not a runner. So it's been such a fascinating experience, but I've been really proud of my body and the way it's been able to show up to this. So that's been fun to do something hard and that I'm not sure that I could do or can do, but I'm doing it. So
that's amazing. It's so funny. Yeah. You don't consider yourself a runner because you are my running inspiration.
So, so sweet.
Identities are approximate sometimes.
They are.
On the topic of religion and health, do you recommend any like book or podcast or show or anything that comes to mind for our listeners to look into?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say is, and I mentioned this at the top of the podcast, the Center for Faith and Justice, which one of the things they do is offer divinity classes, but they also have other ways to intersect and they are just fantastic. And so they aren't necessarily always specifically health related, but the things I learned there translated into my work as a healthcare professional. So that's the Center for Faith and Justice. If you Google that, it'll pop up. And then if you want to know more about Christ House, many years ago, a physician named Dr. David Hilfiker worked here and he wrote a book called Not All of Us Are Saints about his time at Christ House. And that is just a great read to hear about his time here and all the joys and sorrows. And I like to say we're still not all saints, like still trying to figure it out. So yeah.
We'll link both of those in the show notes if you all want to check it out more. And last question is, where can people connect with you?
maybe, and again, this is own personal preference. I don't have like a website or anything like that. But if you are interested in following along on my ultra marathon journey, I do have an Instagram handle specifically for that. And that would be a great way to connect with me if you send me a message. So we'll make sure to link that.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast and being our first guest. It's so exciting.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure I can see you being a recurring guest on the show because I feel like there's a billion questions that we could have explored for a couple more hours. Thank you all, if you're still tuning in and listening, for sticking around and hanging out with us. If you like this, please be sure to like and subscribe and share it with a friend and scream it from the rooftops or whatever virtual spaces that you're in. It would mean a lot. And yeah, if you're curious to find out more, there should be more episodes up by the time this one's up. And so feel free to check out others on our website and anywhere that you can get your podcasts. So thank you again, Mary, for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Good to see you.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks for tuning in to the Healing Theology podcast. Special thanks to our video and audio editor, Emily Nagamoto. Thank you for our illustrations from Katie L., who you can find on Fiverr, and original music by Mosato Music, who will be linked as well. If you want to find out more about our podcast, you can follow us on all social media platforms, and you can find the link tree in our bio for where to find us. You can also follow us along on healingtheology.com. Thanks for tuning in.